What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I'm your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings, and we have an awesome show for you today. You see, if you're listening to this on the day it was posted, which is Wednesday, February 27th, you're probably aware that there's a football event going on in Indianapolis called the NFL Combine, where all of the hopeful rookies, draftees, scouts, coaches, GMs, and other personnel people, including a whole bunch of beat reporters, are all in Indianapolis watching people do a bunch of tests. And I figured I would do an episode priming you all for this experience while we see all of the news and tweets and stuff come down the pipe about people getting certain times and certain drills. And I just wanted to do a little bit of a preview, both for what those drills are and what they mean, if you're somebody who's not particularly familiar. I think you're generally familiar with things if you're listening to a football podcast at this point of the year. But in case you aren't, or in case you want a refresher as to like why these drills are the way they are, I figured I'd do a show about that. But first, we have a little bit of news to talk about. And the first thing I'm going to touch on is actually a follow-up to yesterday's episode about the franchise tag. It was used for the first time for the 2019 season. The San Francisco 49ers used their franchise tag on a kicker, of all things, which is kind of hilarious. But remember, that is the top five salaries for that position. So for a kicker, it actually just lumps all specialists into one. For a kicker, the average of the top five salaries is only $5 million. That's a lot for a kicker. That's an expensive kicker. And you know, I maybe will talk about this in a future episode, but my philosophy is never really to spend at kicker at all, so I would definitely disagree with the move. But it's not really as much of a joke as it may seem based on the reaction to that particular move. You know, when you see the franchise tag, you usually think of like $12 million, $13, $14, $15 million contracts. The kicker's only making five. It's not like that egregious. Teams have paid that much for kickers in the past. But moving on, there was other league-wide news that John Ross, the ninth overall pick from a couple years ago, the Cincinnati Bengals are looking to trade that guy. And I think that that can actually kind of help us segue into this combine thing. Because, well, I don't think the Vikings are really going to be interested right now. They have a speedster in Aldrick Robinson, and John Ross in Cincinnati, despite getting a few red zone touchdowns, was like about as productive on the whole as Laquon Treadwell. Like, he really has been a huge disappointment there, and I don't know if the Vikings are the team to take on that reclamation project. But regardless of that, it kind of sets up an interesting lesson, right? Because everybody agrees he wasn't worth the ninth overall pick, and the reason that he was drafted there is because he ran a 4.22 in the 40-yard dash. That's like a historic 40 time, and he that speed showed up on tape, too. He just burned everybody in college, and it made him look like this substantial deep threat when he really was lacking a lot of the nuances to win contested catches, to win on short and intermediate routes. And I think as a complete wide receiver product, he was lacking in a lot of areas, and that showed up a lot more than his deep speed. In fact, in his whole career, he only has two touchdowns that came from beyond 10 yards out. And when he was supposed to be this, like, take the top off the defense, you know, deep threat, like, get behind him and score from wherever on the field, that really only happened twice. And I actually went and watched those two because they were I was interested in this. And one came on a daggers concept against single high, which, to explain that, so daggers is a concept where one player runs a go route or straight ahead, and the other one, usually the one on the outside of the guy running the go, runs an in route where they run up, or a dig, where they run up, you know, 10, 15 yards and cut 90 degrees to the inside. And the shape of it kind of looks like a dagger. That's why it's called that. And when there's two of those on either side of the field, that means there's two go routes, two people running deep. And when it's single high, that means there's only one high safety. There's only one safety way back deep, and he kind of has to pick one. And he picks too late, and John Ross gets wide open. And on the second one, I will give him credit for it, was another go route down the sideline, and he just won a contested catch in the end zone on like a back shoulder throw, and that's a skillful thing that skillful wide receivers do. The rest of his touchdowns were like red zone touchdowns, and a lot of them were very scheme-based, you know, things where he was schemed into the hole of a zone, or where he ran a slant, but it was a rub concept. And what a rub concept is where, you know, one wide receiver will run a route that's specifically designed to just like get in a guy's way so that the other guy can spring loose on a slant. It works really great at the two, and that's where he caught all of those touchdowns. So, you know, I saw people kind of saying, well, he scored 7 touchdowns in a season on like this many snaps, and that's very good. And I think that's a caution. You know, John Ross is a cautionary tale in two ways. One, touchdowns don't really tell you how good a guy is because they boil it down to only a few plays, and some of those plays can be caused by things that don't necessarily represent skill, things that just happen, things that represent somebody did a good thing. It's not always the receiver. And the second thing is to not really use a 40 time as your basis for evaluation. You need to look at players as complete prospects because in the NFL, as opposed to in college, they are going to be expected to do things that are more versatile. They're going to need to like possess a whole bunch of skills because, you know, if you're going up against the Cincinnati Bengals and you know all you have to do is make sure John Ross doesn't beat you deep, that's like actually pretty easy to do, and you don't have to really mortgage that much of your defense to do it. So I think John Ross like presents a really interesting cautionary tale. I don't think the Vikings will or should go after him for anything more than like a late day 3 pick if they wanted to take a flyer on him or whatever. He also is still working on a rookie contract, a rookie first round top 10 contract, which can be kind of troublesome. And yeah, I mean, how many shows have we done about the work the Vikings need to do just to get their like base level needs addressed in free agency? I don't think adding more stress to that cap situation is really a good idea. So I wouldn't see it from the Vikings perspective, but that doesn't mean we can't like look at that situation and learn lessons from it. And I think that actually provides a pretty good segue into the main topic of the episode, which is the NFL Combine. What do they do at these things and why should we care? And what do we care about for what positions and stuff? So I'm actually just gonna go down it drill by drill. We're gonna step away to an ad and then when we come back, we'll do it. But yeah, we'll go drill by drill and we'll just talk about like the biomechanics of what it measures and who we care about actually measuring that for. So I'll see you all in a minute. All right, we are back. So let's talk about all these combine drills. So there are 7 major drills that we're going to talk about in this episode, and then we'll also kind of talk about how they relate to all the different position groups. But the way this is going to work, if you're new to the NFL or if you're new to following it closely enough to pay attention to the combine, is that they divide all these guys into different groups, and on each day, the different groups do different drills. So one day, you know, you'll see this is when the wide receivers do the 40-yard dash, and this is when the O-line does the bench press, and quarterbacks do interviews, and blah, 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 and it'll go on like that for kind of the whole weekend here. So let's talk about the marquee event first. Let's start big, and let's talk about the 40-yard dash. This is the one everybody talks about. This is the one that got John Ross drafted 9th overall. And this is the one that I think is the most exciting, right? Because you're just seeing how fast these guys are. But it does have some flaws, right? Like simulating an actual on-field NFL situation, it's a little murky, right? When do NFL players ever run 40 yards down the field in a straight line? Pretty much like go routes for wide receivers, and how often do they actually run that route versus having to run something more complicated and nuanced? And then kind of what else? Like when you're a defender and you're chasing down someone who already got past you, I mean, it doesn't come up in that many like relevant situations, but it's still really, really useful. So they run 40 yards and it's really just about straight line speed, right? But it's also about acceleration. So if you think about that 40-yard run, they go about 20 yards of it before they hit full speed. And some teams, the Vikings included, actually only really care about those first 20 yards. And it's about acceleration. So one of the things that they used when they drafted, say, Stephon Diggs, is the 10-yard split. So they just look, they just have somebody stand at the 10-yard line of that 40-yard dash and do their own stopwatch. And how fast did you run 10 yards when you're trying to sprint all the way? And the higher you get in that score, then we'll consider about, you know, drafting you or whatever. And it kind of makes sense because, you know, NFL wide receivers run in a straight line 10 yards very often. There's a whole bunch of routes that have a 10-yard stem and then break into whatever they're going to do, but you have to get that 10 yards first. So it makes a lot of sense to see, okay, how fast can they get to that point? That's really useful and a lot more useful than a 40-yard dash. And some teams pay attention to the 20-yard split as well. And the 40-yard split does have its advantages. And there's a whole bunch of correlational data. There's a great Twitter account that you should definitely follow this weekend, Kent Lee Platt. He's a Lions fan, unfortunately, but he also has a thing called Relative Athletic Score. And it's a machine that he puts all of these combine drills through so that you can actually see, like on a scale of 1 to 10, how these players measure up against everybody else in their class. It's a really nice way to like boil them all down into one comparable number so you can see who is more athletic than who. It's not necessarily who's the best player, right? But it's who's the most athletic. And for whatever that's worth, it's nice to know that on a balanced scale. So we pay attention to the 40 time for like cornerbacks and wide receivers and sometimes even linebackers and stuff. We don't pay that much attention to it for like linemen and definitely not for quarterbacks. Running backs, of course. And we pay attention to it, you know, anybody we care about if they're fast in a straight line, right? So let's move on to the next drill, which we're actually going to talk about the jumps, the broad jump and the vertical jump. So we'll start with the vertical jump. And the first kind of utility of this is very obvious, right? It's for the wide receivers and the cornerbacks. How high can you jump? And that matters, right? If I throw a ball very high, are you going to outjump the guy next to you and get it? But there's kind of a biomechanical reason to actually pay attention to these a lot for linemen, defensive and offensive linemen, and even linebackers to a degree, or anybody who's going to be doing blocking or try to beat blocks. So for an offensive lineman, for example, think about the motion that they take when they come out of a snap. They start, you know, hunched over, bent over in that with their hand on the ground like that, and they have to kind of explode out of that almost like squat kind of stance and then push with as much power as they can generate. So these jumps actually do a pretty good job of simulating that motion, because think about it like when you're lifting, and this is common knowledge, you lift with your legs, not your back, right? You lift with your legs, not your arms. And it's the same thing in football. You have to lift with, you know, that same motion of like unbending your knees and then kind of rolling it through your hips and having that generate as much power as it generates, and then you hope that that wins, right? So as it turns out, linemen are usually pretty heavy, and to move that weight directly upward takes a whole bunch of power, and that power is coming from the same muscles and the same conditioning that you would use when you are going through like an offensive line rep. So for linemen, the vertical jump and the broad jump in another sense actually kind of simulate that movement really well. And the Vikings actually have thresholds for those drills, and they'll like be very hesitant to take an offensive or defensive lineman if they aren't good enough at those drills. Only in the very, very deep rounds will they start to like go back on that principle, and that's because the risk at that point is just so low. So both of these drills, the standing broad jump, where you just stand in a place and you jump forward as far as you can, and the vertical jump, where you stand in a place and you jump as high as you can, are using roughly the same mechanics. And so, you know, there shouldn't be a huge disparity between the two things. The only real difference is that the vertical jump, you can't measure quite as precisely. I mean, they have that like plastic little thing where it's like how many little flags can you turn, but the broad jump you can measure like down to like millimeters, whereas the vertical jump you can't be quite as precise, and that matters, right? It's a game of inches, but it's by and large you'll get kind of the same information from both. It's nice to have both though. And of course you should, you know, adjust all these things for weight. If you're a heavier person, you're not going to jump as high, and you know, jumping however many centimeters is going to be a little bit more impressive when you have to move that much more weight to do it. So speaking of heavy big boy drills, let's talk about the bench press. The bench press is kind of controversial because a lot of people don't think it means a lot. Because like, think about all of the motions and like biomechanical things that football players do, you know, play in and play out on a football field. None of them really look like the bench press. There is no point at which you are laying on the ground pushing something upward with like those muscles. And you push with your arms and your shoulders when you're an offensive lineman, but like we just kind of discussed, a lot of that power, you know, you lift with your legs, not your arms. And it's the same thing with the offensive line. So like, what is the bench press good for? For one, I think it does at least a little bit of a better job simulating times when you're blocking, not coming out of a three-point stance. Like the kind of blocks you'd see like running backs and tight ends do a lot. I think that it simulates those, you know, you're already standing all the way up and really your only chance is to just push that guy's chest harder than he can push your chest. And I think that the bench press can help simulate that situation, but it's also more of a stamina thing. Whereas, you know, those jumps, the vertical and broad jump, it's one motion and how much explosiveness can you generate in like one go. And that's important information. But also, I think similarly important is how many times can you bench 225? That is what the bench press is, right? It's 225 pounds, as many reps as you can do before you max out. So if you think about a 225 pound bench press as a simulation of a football block, and it's not that good of a simulation of a football block, but from a like fatigue angle, think of it that way. How many reps you can do kind of simulates how many blocks you could do before you start to get tired. And while it doesn't like perfectly simulate the motion and you're not kind of using the same muscles that you would use on a football block, I think it is a generally useful conditioning test that you can still use to just kind of look at a guy and say, all right, how, you know, when it's the fourth quarter and this guy has been run over by Aaron Donald all day, is he going to be any use? And I think a bad bench press might raise some red flags in the minds of coaches. And I think that's the kind of thing that you should look for. It definitely takes a backseat to the jumps, in my opinion, when it comes to blocking, except for like tight end and running back blocking. But it is useful just for the fact that it's multiple reps instead of one, you know, explosive motion. How much power can you generate? It's how long can you last when you're doing this really strenuous motion over and over and over and over again? I think there's value in that. So there's still more stuff to talk about, a lot more of the running, and then obviously like the other drills and kind of position by position, what do we care about with these guys? So I'm going to step away to a quick ad break, and when I come back, we will finish this out and talk a little bit more about the rest of the stuff you're going to see at the Combine. See y'all in a minute. All right, we're back. So let's talk about some agility drills. And the first one I want to talk about is what's usually called the three-cone drill. But it's that one where they set up a cone right in front of a guy, and then a second cone right like 5 yards away from that, and then a third cone 5 yards to the side of the second cone. So it makes a little L, and then you run around the L and back. And the whole point of that obviously is to measure agility, right? It's how do you get very quickly from standing still to 5 yards away? How quickly can you do that? And then change direction, and then turn all the way around, and then change direction again and get back. So this is obviously useful to know for like a running back or like a wide receiver, tight end, or even like linebackers and cornerbacks, right? You want to know that kind of agility, that short area quickness. But short area quickness actually comes into play a lot for offensive linemen, especially in a zone scheme. So the Vikings care a lot about this. They've actually been proven to like not draft. Arif Hasan has done excellent work on this. It's over at The Athletic. I'll link it if I can find it. But they will like be very, very hesitant to draft an offensive lineman that doesn't have good three-cone scores, because they often ask offensive linemen to do exactly that, to go from lined up, dead still right before the snap, to two steps to the side and then block someone. But you have to get two steps to the side really, really quickly. You know, for a big guy, that can vary a lot. There can be guys that are like not very quick because their whole thing is to be strong. But when you're asking them to also get somewhere, you know, more quickly than Aaron Donald or Ndamukong Suh or Khalil Mack, that's something that you kind of want to measure, right? So the three cone's really useful even for the big guys like that. Similarly, in the agility drills, there's the 20-yard shuttle, which is kind of the same idea, where you start in one place, you run 5 yards one way, you turn all the way around into a 180 and run 10 yards the other way back over where you started, then turn around again and run back to the original starting line. So you run a total of 20 yards, but you are turning all the way around twice in there. And that comes into play a lot for like basically every defensive position, everywhere where you're going to have to do coverage, especially safeties and linebackers that are doing more reading. You're going to have to basically read the play, change direction on a dime, and then attack. And how quickly can you do that? So it matters a whole bunch for like corner and linebacker and all of those. So the last drill that I'm going to talk about that we like measure and that's like up on the NFL site is the 60-yard shuttle. And it's a very similar thing. You line up four cones, each 5 yards apart from each other. So one at 0, 5, 10, and 15. You run to the first one and back. You run to the second one and back. And you run to the far one and back. So you're running a total of 60 yards by doing that. And that's kind of the same thing where you have to like get a short area away and then turn around and then, you know, run again and turn around and sprint and turn around. And how fast can you do all that stuff? It doesn't really simulate an NFL play very well because like how often are you going to be turning around all that much? But I think there's a stamina element to it that can help. You know, it's like a hustle drill almost. You know, when there's somebody that reversed, you know, a run play that went to the right and then he reversed field, went to the left, found a crease, got up 40 yards. Are you still hustling or are you winded and is he going to get away from you now? I do think it matters for that. And it matters for kind of the same defensive things. I actually like looking at that one for defensive linemen because defensive linemen can get really gassed running around, especially against, you know, Russell Wilson-esque quarterbacks that are going to run all those big fat defensive linemen around. That is an interesting drill to me just to measure that specific thing. And I think with the combine and with all of these drills, that's the theme, right? Is you're measuring a thing about these guys, but it by no means gives you the whole picture. You shouldn't look at just the 40 times for wide receivers and then take the best one. You should look at that and say, okay, that's his straight line speed. and he is the fastest straight line guy. How is he against everything else, you know? On a defensive lineman, if he has a great 60-yard shuttle, you say, okay, this guy can run around forever and he's not going to get gas. That is awesome. That is a plus. We put it in the plus column. Now let's look at everything else he does. And if we have enough plus columns, now we like him and we put him in the high rounds. It's all part of the scouting process. And a lot of like the draft nicks and people that have been doing amazing work on the draft prospects, especially over at like the Draft Network, and a lot of those people are on Locked On NFL Draft. Go listen to that. You should be listening to it this time of year. Similarly to this podcast, you know, you can ask in your car, just ask your smart device, play podcast Locked On NFL Draft or Locked On Vikings. But those guys have been watching tape on all of these players for like months now and putting together all these profiles. And, you know, if they see a player that's like really gassed in the fourth quarter of every game, you know, and they like slow down a ton by the end of games, they'll already kind of know that this guy's going to struggle at the 60-yard shuttle. And if that player indeed does struggle in the 60-yard shuttle, you can kind of put that down as a minus in that player's column. You know, hey, he doesn't quite have the stamina. So I think the combine is a really important piece of the puzzle. I think it tells you things about these players that you really do have to know. And it's a nice objective way to measure their athleticism. But you also have to understand that, you know, these guys have been training for this for a while. And, you know, these are motions and athletic exercises that NFL players don't really do all the time, except specifically for the combine. So there are some cases where somebody just tanks it. Like I look at Orlando Brown, who had a viral Twitter thread on Tuesday. You know, he had a horrible combine for a right tackle. He really just failed miserably at like all the drills. He had a much better pro day. And it turns out that he just kind of had a bad day because he had a really good rookie season. So that's like one example, and there's always like the kind of counter example, but by and large, the guys who do well at the combine turn out to be athletic at those things in the NFL. And if you know what to look for, and if you know what matters to you, then you can like make those determinations and add them to whatever you saw in the tape or whatever you read, you know, somebody who watched the tape, which is what I do because I am by no means a draft scout. And you can kind of juxtapose those things and come up with your own profile and come up with the guys that really interest you. So real quick before we wrap up today, I just wanted to talk a little position by position on like what I care about. And I want to start with quarterbacks because if you'll notice, I didn't really mention them in any of those drills. And it's because how much of a raw athlete your quarterback is not really what we're measuring here at the combine, unless they are supposed to be like a runaround quarterback, you know, like Baker Mayfield or Josh Allen last year. Those guys, you know, you were paying attention to their three cones and stuff to see how agile they are. But for the most part, you want to watch these guys throw. And this is not going to tell you how good of a quarterback they are. You know, if they look really great on their throwing day, that doesn't necessarily translate into them being this crazy explosive quarterback because there's so much of a mental aspect. You know, in the combine, you're not reading a defense. You're not trying to go through a progression. You're not trying to deal with pressure or call a protection. You're just trying to place the ball. But that's important to see if they can place the ball. I would argue that's actually maybe the most or the second most important thing quarterbacks do is put the ball where they intend to put the ball. And so watching them do that, you can't really measure it as objectively as you can with like the actual timed drills, but it's still important to look at that to identify that specific trait. So moving on, running backs, we already kind of talked about, you know, the three cone matters. I think the 20-yard shuttle matters. And I do think that the 40-yard dash matters, but mostly the 10-yard split, because what I want to see, you know, when a running back has a gaping hole to run through and they have 10 yards untouched, like, do they have the burst to really, like, turn that into something even more? Moving on to wide receivers, obviously the 40 is important, but again, for similar reasons, I kind of believe in the 10 and 20-yard splits more than the full-on 40 time. I also want to see their three cone because most route running includes, like, short area explosiveness at harsh angles, so the three cone and the 20-yard shuttle matter a lot to me for those reasons. And I actually kind of like the bench press because they deal with that motion in press coverage all the time. Same thing for cornerbacks. Moving on, we've talked a bunch about offensive line. The Vikings have very specific thresholds with offensive line with the three cone and the 20-yard shuttle and the broad jump and the vertical jump. Those all matter a ton. The bench press kind of matters for like the interior guys, a little bit less so for the tackles. But it's still probably worth paying attention to, but definitely shouldn't like be the most important drill in your evaluations. For tight ends, I actually want to pay attention to the bench press. Same with running backs, just from a pass protection perspective and a run blocking perspective. But tight ends, otherwise I treat them, you know, like wide receivers. I want to see how fast they can run in a 10 and 20 yard split. I want to see their three cone. I want to see their athleticism. With wide receivers and tight ends and running backs, honestly, I also want to see their catching drills. you know, the gauntlet where they basically run down the field and catch like a ball from their left and a ball from their right and a ball from their left and a ball from their right. I want to see that and look at their form and just look at the way that they twist and adjust to passes that aren't always perfect in those drills. And obviously, you know, a drop really hurts in that drill, and that, you know, you hate to see those kinds of things. Though, again, that can kind of just be like, oops, had a bad day, you know, head wasn't in it, I was too nervous. And that kind of thing doesn't always translate into the NFL. So moving on to defense. With defensive line, you know, I care again about the broad and the vertical jumps. I care a whole bunch about the three cone, especially with edge rushers, because they often have to make those sudden moves, and I want to see that suddenness and explosiveness. I care a little bit about the bench press with interior linemen, but it's kind of similar to like interior offensive linemen. For linebackers, I definitely want to see that 60-yard shuttle and that 20-yard shuttle. I want to see those players that have to like run around. For defensive linemen, I care about the 60-yard shuttle as well. But for linebackers, I care about it a little bit more, just because I want to see them, you know, have to like come up, change direction, and then turn around and like chase a guy, right? I want to see their athletic ability to do that. And then for defensive backs, both corners and safeties, I actually care a little bit about the bench press for corners, because again, they're doing press coverage, and that's often the same thing. Like, I want to see how powerfully they can jam, and that does a reasonable job of actually measuring that motion. Like, if you think about the motion of a press coverage, it's kind of the same thing as a bench press. And then kind of the same thing for wide receivers. I want to see their three cone. I want to see their 20-yard shuttle, because often, especially for safeties, you know, they're going to have to come, like, very far upfield and then switch direction depending on their read. And then for, you know, obviously the 40-yard dash, and the same thing with 10 and 20-yard splits, because they'll usually be running, trying to run routes with receivers in those same kind of 10 and 20-yard chunks. I also like to see the on-field drills that aren't timed, but just things where they have to kind of show off their agility and show off their backpedaling and stuff. I kind of wish they made corners run like a 20-yard dash backpedaling. That would be really interesting, because they usually spend a lot of like the first few steps of plays backpedaling, and I would love to measure that, but that's not something that the combine does. So sorry, that was like really lightning fast, but I am kind of running out of time. But that's kind of what I care about position by position for these guys. It'll be really like fun to see all these numbers come in. I don't think the combine is really excellent TV, but if you're truly a draft Nick, you'll tune in and watch it. Otherwise, you'll just wait for the numbers to come in, and then at the end of it, you know, guys can kind of do a lot of math and look at teams and their thresholds and what teams value and how high you have to be to get drafted by this team. That's when you get into the really interesting stuff and you can really build a cool profile. And after the combine, even though, you know, free agency is still a couple weeks away, we'll be able to talk a lot more in detail about the draft, because a lot more of people's evaluations will be decided by the combine. And then, you know, we can kind of use those evaluations and they'll be pretty a lot closer to the proxies of what the teams use on draft day, so we can do a much better job, you know, simulating the draft and looking into certain situations and what the Vikings should actually do. So I'm really excited for that part of the year. It's always really fun to evaluate all these kids, and I will see you all tomorrow. That's going to do it for this episode of Locked On Vikings, and I will see you all tomorrow for our weekly mock off-season Thursday episode. Can't wait to do that with you, and I will see you all tomorrow. Skull!